If you're only as good as that day's starting pitcher, then boy, some of these teams are screwed. Or are they?
We are going to talk about postseason rotations on this Wednesday edition of Baseball Barbacast. Look around the postseason picture and get into some of the true wackiness from Tuesday night's action.
Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world in the mix to start game four of an ALCS for the Baltimore Orioles. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. And we're building up.
Hey, Jake, tell me this, though. If you could say right now your Orioles will make it to game four of the ALCS and then you have to start, I think you would take that.
Yes. That's sign me up.
Right.
I think a lot of that room would take that too.
Right. Because at this point, if you say right now, yes, the Orioles are going to get to game four of the ALCS, that probably involves the offense heating up enough to where if they have to give you the ball, they might be able to outscore your catastrophic first inning.
That is very true. Yes, the Baltimore Orioles offense and really the whole situation is a monstrosity, a calamity, a disaster. We'll get to that and a whole lot more on this episode of Baseball Barbacast. It is Wednesday, September 18th. We are inching towards the end of the regular season. It's crazy, man. It's really wild. Just, you know, the time is dwindling. The clock is running out. Teams are saying goodbye. Teams are staying in the mix. And I think let's begin at the top of the National League, where the Philadelphia Phillies, by winning last night, have really gifted themselves some leash and some leeway in the NL. They now have the tiebreaker over the Brewers and the Dodgers. They look like the front runner to get that top seed. The Brewers, who, if they had won last night, would have clinched the NL Central. They can do that tonight with a win or a Cubs loss. Last night, the Dodgers and the Padres both lost, which keeps that gap at 3.5. However, there was a lot of interesting happenings in the NL wildcard picture.
Yes. And by the way, that 3.5 game gap, which, as you mentioned, still included the Padres losing, is now the smallest division gap because the Orioles lost and the Yankees won. So division races as it stands right now are not looking especially compelling. But as you mentioned, still a lot to be sorted out over the next 10 days. And as you mentioned, in the National League last night, I think the biggest thing, and I called this 3 months ago, I said anyone going to Coors Field in these final weeks is going to have a bad time. And when we talked about the Mets and the Braves, we've just been going, Mets, Braves. One of these teams isn't going to make it. And I know the Braves also had a tough loss last night, which we can get to. But Arizona losing these first couple games in Colorado this week is not part of the plan. They lose a close game on Monday. They get just really crushed last night. And now you have a situation where the Mets and Braves are not tied, but the Mets and D-backs are tied. And now I think we could be heading towards some interesting discourse, which is probably pointless, but where you're going to have Mets fans feeling themselves saying, wait a minute, I'd rather play the Brewers than the Padres. We don't want to get the second seed. Like, we're going to have all kinds of stuff like that. The point is, the D-backs are now in this conversation of, wait a minute, do they have to hang on for dear life over these next 10 days? And that is maybe something that we didn't perceive. But I said there would be something that would change. Maybe it wouldn't be the teams that were in postseason position, but maybe the order of them. And I think we could end up to some late switches, even though we've been penciling in, you know, D-backs Padres for a few weeks now.
Yeah, I'm much more compelled by the Mets surge and the Braves. Mm-hmm. Tumble.
Yeah.
Being at Citi Field the last two nights, the Mets without Lindor are not as good. Easy, Jake. Yeah, I know. We saw the real downside of that on Monday night when they scored no runs through the first whatever innings and then just pulled a W out of their butt because the Nationals can't hit. And then last night, they just jumped all over the Nats kind of B relievers and kick their butt. The Mets are so weird, dude. This team is so confounding to me. Last night, Luis Angel Acuña, who was playing shortstop in Lindor's absence, was sensational.
Yes.
And yet I look at this team and I struggle to like figure them out. This is what I wanted to ask you about. Did you see the Joel Sherman report about Pete Alonso giving a speech?
Okay. I saw a clip of Pete being like, I talked to the, but no, tell me about this. Basically, no, I've not seen this.
So Lindor goes down Monday afternoon, announces that he's going to be out for a handful of days. How long? TBD. I think how long he's out is pretty proportional to how many games they're up, because they're going to do whatever they can to give him that rest. So now that they are kind of two games clear, I would not expect him to play until the weekend. That's just my opinion. That's no reporting. But Joel Sherman reports that after Lindor was announced out, the Mets had a closed door meeting and three people spoke. Okay. The GM, or the Pobo, David Stearns, the manager, Carlos Mendoza, and Pete Alonso, baby, addressed the team and said that in his time as a Met, he has never gotten to, I believe this is not quoted, but it was something like this, party with the boys. Because when they made it in 2022, they found out on the final day that they weren't going to win the division. Mm. And they kind of fell ass backwards into the wild card. Mm-hmm. And so Pete has never really gotten the full celebration. Now, Jordan, if you're in the Mets locker room and Pete steps up and says he wants to party, how are you feeling about that?
I mean, everyone else is thinking that too. I don't think the thought is we want to party, but I get it. I mean, it is funny because it's like when I saw just the basic tweet, it's like Pete spoke up in the meeting about how I didn't know that was the premise. I assumed it was, you know, right. We got to stick together. We're still a good team. And also it made sense from the narrative standpoint of like, this is a time for Pete Alonso to step up and be, even if it's for a couple of days, like Pete is such a main character, has been for his whole time with the Mets. But because this season has been all about Lindor, we haven't been talking about Pete and the fact that he's a free agent in 2 months and all those things, right? And so, and his connection with New York and how much he wants to stay versus how much they want to keep him, all those things we thought was going to be a bigger story, and Lindor has very much overshadowed that. But I have talked about how I do think that going into the postseason, and perhaps including the party to get into the postseason, Pete will once again emerge as a main character, and I think this could very much be the start of that.
How he performs and how the Mets finish the season over the last week and change will go a long way to establish how he is remembered and considered in New York if he does leave. Like, if he catches fire and the Mets get the 5 seed, I mean, he's a hero. And if he's buns and they get bounced, then people will be mad at him forever. And is that fair? No, but that is kind of what is shaping up. My takeaway, last thing about the Mets, last 2 days, who you play right now is so important.
Yes.
How that team is playing. The Nats are doing their best, but boy, is that an advantage versus the Braves, who are playing the Reds, who are not very good, but are playing much friskier baseball at this moment in time. And that was on display last night, where the Braves go up 5-1 early and then just fumble the lead very slowly and lose 6-5.
Yeah. And I did want to flip it to the Braves here in a second. One more thing on the Mets. I want to hit on Acuña here, because I think that...
Give some background on who this man is.
Just some background. I mean, you might have seen the name before, but I think it's important to... You might think, like, wait a minute, why wasn't this a bigger deal when he was called up? Like, because it kind of just... And obviously, it was an emergency replacement. This wasn't in the plans. And the reason it wasn't in the plans is because he has not been good in the minors this season. Now, he was still very much considered a prospect. This is still someone, he's 22 years old, and there's a reason that he was, you know, the sole return for Max Scherzer when they traded him to Texas. That was a big bet on a singular talent, right? And he had very much ascended into legitimate prospect status. But of course, this is just the nature of our industry. It's going to get inflated because of who his brother is. Not just who his brother is, because when you watch him, you're like, oh my God, that's just a smaller version of his brother. And last night, the home run that he hit and just like the finish and the swing. And I was like, oh, honestly, my first thought was, man, I miss Ronald. Like, I know that's the last thing Mets fans want to hear, but truly I was like, man, I miss Ronald. But the fact is, he just hadn't been having a good season in AAA, to where it's not that his prospect status was toast, but you know, his OBP was under 300. He wasn't really hitting for much power. Like, it was not a, it wasn't like he was doomed, but it was, he didn't seem like an option. And that's why he's batting ninth, and that's why they called him up only under these extreme circumstances. At the same time, there are still, even, you know, I've talked about this with other players that show up unexpectedly, even that one big swing, that three-hit game last night, even against the Nats, like, that's massive deal. He's already done the job. At the same time, it does make me think, like, how much more of an important part is he going to be? Maybe not at all. Maybe he will somehow end up on the postseason roster as, like, a bench guy. We'll see. But it is fun. He's a fun player, obviously, when he's rolling. I just want to both temper expectations and explain why it wasn't a big deal when he was called up.
Can you imagine if Luis Angel Acuña rolls into Truist Park in Atlanta next week and lights the Braves up?
Exactly.
Oh, my God. That would just be something to behold.
So, and again, like, there might be an 0-for-20 around the corner, because again, this guy was not tearing it up in AAA, but who cares? Because just start spinning it, right? At some point, we're probably not going to be giving him stuff to hit. But I'm going to enjoy it. Well, and again, he'll probably still end up being a solid player, but he is an interesting character to add into this mix here, because as you mentioned, if he, you know, was just another guy that without the famous name and the famous brother, maybe the going to Atlanta next week wouldn't be as compelling, but now it certainly is. But last thing, I guess, on Atlanta, anything else on Acuña or the Mets? Because I just Atlanta we should hit on quickly here.
Yeah, that was a horrible loss last night. If I had told you that they had lost 6-5 with Grant Holmes spot starting for a banged up Ronaldo Lopez, you wouldn't have been too shocked. But Holmes was very good, and they were up 5-2 when he left the ball game, and a series of defensive miscues, and then a very big backbreaking two-run home run from Spencer Steer off of Pierce Johnson in the seventh was enough.
But it's not just that, Grant Holmes was spot starting. It's that you were going up against Brandon Williamson, who has been hurt all season and hasn't pitched much, and then he immediately left. He didn't make it out of
the second.
He was out in the second inning. So the Reds also had to go bullpen game, and then they managed to piece it together with Fernando Cruz, Carson Spires, Buck Farmer, Brent Suter, Emilio Pagan, and Alexis Diaz. And while you had the lead. So yeah, that's really bad. And to your point, the Reds, especially in Cincinnati, are a lot less of a friendly opponent than playing the Nationals at home. And so, as we know, the schedule will flip a little bit again here, as the Mets have to play the Phillies, which is still going to be a tougher task than who Atlanta has this weekend, which I am forgetting. Is it Miami? No, it's not Miami. Who does Atlanta have this weekend? It is. It is Miami. They're going to Miami. So there you go. So it will, you know, the quality of opponent will change a little bit this weekend. But as we also just saw with the Marlins, we should just hit on this quickly. I have talked about how Coors Field has kind of a weird effect on teams. Weird stuff happens in Marlins Park. And that was a very Coors Field-esque game last night, where Bobby Miller just stinks. I mean, there's really no way around it. He is a non-competitive option for the Dodgers at this point. And then a lot of the relievers that came in didn't really do much better. So the Dodgers, Ohtani hits his 48th home run. But that's another just kind of embarrassing loss in that game in Miami. So they'll have to kind of get back at it over these next two games against one of the worst teams in baseball. I know they got more of a cushion, so the stakes aren't quite as big, but that's still not a great look for the Dodgers.
One last thing about the Braves. They have gotten no offensive production from catcher over the last 2 months. That is a big deal, because it's something of a strength for this team, with Sean Murphy and Travis d'Arnaud, two really solid players. They're bottom 10, bottom 5 in catcher production across baseball. Look, catchers generally don't hit well, but for Atlanta, this was an area where they were supposed to have two guys who were raking. Now, the full season numbers for d'Arnaud are still pretty good, and Murphy is someone who I think is just playing through something, because I refuse to believe that he's this bad. But when you look at what's missing, besides the injured players, catcher is an area that kind of jumps out at you a little bit. So that's what's going on in the National League.
Yeah. We'll get to the crazy Padres game later. I just want to mention. We'll talk about that later. Yeah.
I still think that the Braves will close that gap down a little bit before the two teams play.
Yeah.
That is at least what I hope. If the Braves keep losing and the Mets like sweep this weekend.
That has to happen this weekend. Yeah. I mean, if that doesn't happen this weekend, then things have really gone sideways for Atlanta. So we will see. And maybe if Arizona keeps struggling, then that, you know, keeps them in the mix as well. But I'm because they're going to Milwaukee this weekend. So all these teams are going to have varying levels of motivation and stakes. But that is the National League standings as it stands. But as I'm done trying to be like, oh, that's definitely going to happen. Like, who knows at this point? Teams are too close. American League, Jake.
Yeah. I'm an American.
So the Orioles were bad again. Any hope that, you know, we did our sorry for your mentions on Monday. They had the off day. Maybe they did go in for some extra work. But ultimately, when Blake Snell is rolling and you're already struggling, you're probably not going to score very many runs. Now, allowing as many runs as they did to the Giants is a different issue. yeah, it was a non-competitive effort from the Orioles in a stretch where they have not looked very good.
Big error here from the O's. Okay, here's the big error. Mike Elias spoke to the media, the GM of the Orioles, before this game and tried to change the energy, insist that a turnaround was coming. Maybe there still is. But when you're going up against Blake Snell, you got to delay that by a day. You just like, Mike Elias is unavailable today. He's going to talk to the media tomorrow because now the narrative shift doesn't make sense. You got to sandbag that. You got to sandbag that if you're facing locked in Blake Snell. Orioles had no chance last night. Now, all of the things Elias said about a turnaround ring hollow when you go out and you get five hits all game and don't score.
Yeah. Yeah, and they lost because they didn't score. So I don't want to go too hard on the pitching, and Suarez wasn't good. But also, like, when you're putting Kimbrel into low leverage and he still gives up six runs, it's just like, okay, now how am I supposed to feel about that, right? This is supposed to be like a get-right outing, and he can't get through the inning. Now, hey, you got two perfect from Birch Smith, so that's encouraging. That gives
not
you
the
a little
problem.
Bit,
not the problem. A bit of hope. Not even close. Birch Smith, get out of here. Birch Smith is not a character in the collapse of this team.
He is, but he is. No, I know. I'm projecting forward. They might actually need Birch Smith to get outs, but it's not going to matter if they can't score. So
if the Orioles lose a playoff game because Birch Smith blows it, that's not like no one cares. This offense.
Well, that's not
Jordan, but I agree with you. Stop. This offense stinks.
Okay,
right now.
I know. You're right.
They
you're
stink.
Right. You're right.
Birch Smith is nowhere in the room of the conversation.
It's not
Adley
why they're here.
It's not why they're here.
It's not Adley why they're here.
Has been bad for 2.5 months. Okay?
I know, but...
They have a plethora of injured hitters. Cedric Mullins and Gunnar Henderson are like the only two guys who've been hitting for this team at all. Ryan O'Hearn has fallen off a cliff. And last night, facing Blake Snell, it looked like they were playing against a different sport.
Correct.
They were nowhere close at no point. Emmanuel Rivera hit sixth last night.
He had a hit.
And
he
the
at least
most,
got a
I
hit.
Know he had a hit. He had the first hit of the game. Okay. The most telling moment, there was a quote that Mike Elias said where he said he didn't anticipate the loss of depth this second half through injury. That is the whole point of building a roster. That is the whole thing. Of course, there is an amount of injuries that you cannot account for. I understand that. From the pitching side, everybody and their non-baseball watching relatives knew that the Orioles were light and needed more help at the deadline. And they just straight up didn't get it because they tried to get cute and trade for Trevor Rogers because he had team control. Blake Snell was another guy who could have gotten dealt at the deadline. And here he is shoving it down your throat.
That's
in
true.
A really, really important
That's
game.
True. You could have convinced the Giants to trade you Blake Snell. Absolutely.
The Orioles at this point are going to be the top wild card seed, almost certainly. They are going to have a three-game set in the wild card round, almost certainly, at home against the Royals. It will be very cool because it will be Gunnar against Bobby Witt, and that'll be fun to watch. However, the vibe around Camden Yards is a catastrophe right now compared to what it was and what it should have been. And I think the important thing about Mike Elias, right, he has done an amazing job turning this team around and getting them in the position where they're at. They have been so good since really the middle of 2022. However, he has yet to prove that he is capable of being the GM of a competitive team and making the moves that can fill out a roster.
Contending team.
Contending team. Yes. Now, is he capable of that? Maybe. Maybe.
Yeah.
The
Still
early.
Early
returns.
Yeah. Yep.
The early returns are not particularly encouraging.
Yeah.
Now, remember, this is year two of what is supposed to be and should be a long era of contention for the Baltimore Orioles. The last 3 months raise a lot of questions. And if they bounce out of October very swiftly, those questions need to be asked over the offseason. The flip side of the Orioles falling apart is that the Yankees have opened up a 4-game lead in the division with a rousing win out in Seattle last night, telling Brian Wu to frickin' beat it, winning 11-2 against the Mariners.
Yes, and we'll talk more about that game specifically later. But the point is, the Yankees just look better. And Judge is putting some good swings together. The offense is starting to cook. Volpe was benched for at least a game. That was interesting. Oswaldo Cabrera getting the start at shortstop last night, I believe. That was, I don't think that's permanent. But, you know, Volpe's offensive struggles now being highlighted more as the rest of the team has started to hit much better. But again, this is still first world problems, ultimately, for the Yankees when you see what Juan Soto has done. We'll talk about more about that later. But yeah, so the Yankees in a good place. And then also just bigger picture, the other thing in the American League that's important is it's just a big week in the AL Central. And I've been there in Cleveland for the last two games with the Twins and the Guardians. The Royals and Tigers have played two very, very compelling games as well. I was not in attendance for those games, so I'm not going to comment on those as much. I know there are a lot of Tigers fans listening that are sad that we're not talking about them more. And again, we're going to have to here soon. But interesting first couple games. One of the wins of the season for Cleveland on Monday in a game where Matthew Boyd was not good and they used kind of their B relievers until Class A. They managed to come back. Kyle Manzardo, big swing late. Steven Vogt getting very emotional in the press conference afterwards.
I want to talk about that.
Very much. Let's hit it right now. So just to set the seed, right? Okay, so Kyle Manzardo hits a big go-ahead home run in the eighth inning. They bring in Class A. They slam the door. The Twins have another heartbreaking loss. Home run is against Griffin Jacks, who's been one of the best relievers in baseball this year. Steven Vogt afterwards is asked about, you know, I mean, he's had a million to talk about how great the clubhouse is and I love these guys, blah, blah, blah. And he was Mandy Bell of MLB.com to ask him, like, what was going through your mind when, you know, Manzardo hits that homer? Pretty much the most basic question imaginable. And he starts talking about how, you know, the home run's great, but my favorite moment is looking at Josh Naylor, who had hit a double to lead off the inning, standing there with his arms up looking. And, you know, that moment between two teammates and looking at the dugout. And then he just, like, starts kind of getting choked up and just talking about, like, he's like, I love those guys. This is an emotional win, an emotional night. And we were all just looking around like, whoa. like again, he's, because the words that he was saying, he has been saying the whole season. So it's like the sentiment was not new. But because that win, so a lot of the Guardians wins, now they've had some dramatic wins. They had that extra inning game in New York and they've had some other, you know, comebacks. But a lot of them have been kind of to script. You get up by a couple runs and then you just turn it over to the best bullpen in baseball and you kind of cruise the rest of the way. It's very, very, you know, copy paste. That's the recipe. But to have a game like this where it's turns late, a game that was not going well, you could tell it really got to him. And Steven Vogt has certainly been a very interesting person in this Guardian season. And it was an interesting moment.
More crying, please.
Yeah.
There
more crying for sure.
More crying. The no crying in baseball line has set our sport back so far. More crying in baseball.
Yes.
This whole exercise, and it's our lives, it's our jobs, it's our passion, doesn't actually matter unless it matters, right? And when it should mean something, the amount of time, effort, passion that Steven Vogt has poured into this team this year, that all managers hopefully are pouring into their teams, that should matter. And to see it matter and to see him let it matter was really gratifying, because on the public side, we just want to know, we want to see that it matters the same to them that it does to, like, the fans.
Totally.
Right? That's what fans want to see. And yep. I think Vogt tearing up here and showing emotion and being raw is just another sign that he's good at this.
Yeah.
Right? I think a lot of managers would have just kind of turned that switch off. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and he said something boring, and he can do that.
Yeah, he's done that a lot. He's figured out how to give the kind of standard managerial answers. But no, I mean,
we love a cry
that he's as a first time guy is pretty cool. So
did you cry? Did you cry when he cried? You were in the room. Did you cry?
Well, then the funniest part is that Manzardo comes in after. Like right after him to like do his post game, and he's a rookie, big home run, biggest home run, biggest swing of his career, you know, by far. And he's just very, and I was like, man, that guy wasn't crying. How much does he care? It's like,
everyone should cry.
This guy doesn't mean as much to him. Other Guardians thing quickly, Kwan going on the IL yesterday. I'm not going to get into the details of that, but the point is choosing to put someone on the IL at this point in the season is significant. Now, they backdated it to Saturday, which means that he is going to be eligible, of course, to return before the postseason, but they are now going to rely on some other guys. That's why Manzardo is very important. That's why Angel Martinez, another rookie, very important for them to come up and play well. So that is something certainly to monitor with Cleveland. Minnesota wins the second game. They really patched it together after Zebby Matthews had a solid start for them. So big response there, but still two more games in this one. I will be there again tonight. And then the other thing is that the Tigers won again. So the Guardians, I believe, can clinch today still with another Royals loss and a win. But the Guardians are closing in on clinching the division. They're still, of course, pushing for that top seed. But the Tigers now are a game and a half, right? Behind Minnesota. Yeah, game and a half behind Minnesota. Minnesota does have the tiebreaker there, but two incredible wins in Kansas City these last couple nights is ridiculously impressive. And yes, if they do indeed complete the sweep, we'll probably have a more substantial Tigers conversation on Friday.
We'll let you know who is on the Tigers.
Yes, that is the American League. As we mentioned, Houston won. I think that's it for postseason picture. Anything else before we take a break?
No, let's wrap it up when we take a break. When we get back, we will zoom in on some postseason rotations and let you know who we feel good and not good about. Welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Jake Mintz, Jordan Schuster, and I got three vaccines yesterday.
Wow.
Shouts out to CovidVax, got the FluVax, and then I stuck myself with a fishing rod on my small little baby honeymoon after I got married, and so I got a tetanus shot.
Nice.
Dude, I am hanging. Yeah. My left arm is sore and painful. A non-throwing arm, it's a reminder of what life was like as a college reliever who threw every day.
Mm-hmm.
And I bring that up just to let you know that I am unavailable to pitch in October, if any of the following playoff rotations need an arm, they should call Jordan and not me. What we're going to do now is draft the playoff rotations, the potential playoff rotations. I wrote something up on Yahoo Sports about playoff rotations. I think they are kind of an underrated element of the conversation about October, just because you are only as good as the pitchers you can throw out there. In October, you need like 3.5 starters, depending on how good your bullpen is. In the regular season, you need like 7 to get through. And so it is a different dynamic. It helps you win games when the weather gets cold. So we're going to talk about 14 teams. You can take 14 rotations. We are going to crumble up the Seattle Mariners and put them to the side. Both because you would probably take them first.
Or at least in the top few, but right? You move them aside,
And because they are too far back and it makes the exercise more complicated. So just to review, Yankees, Guardians, Astros, Orioles, Royals, Twins, Tigers, Phillies, Dodgers, Brewers, Padres, D-backs, Mets, Braves. Jordan Schuster, when you are older, you get the first pick.
We'll keep this. We'll probably do this some version of this exercise again at some point, but we'll just go as things stand now. And I'll just keep it simple, and I will take the Phillies first. These first couple picks are interesting, and then we could go in so many different directions after the first probably 3 or 4. But I'm going to keep it boring and go with the Phillies here.
So that's Wheeler, Nola, Christopher Sanchez, Ranger Suarez. It's looking pretty likely that Suarez will start game 4. He's just been pretty shaky over the last month and a half. He's still a good bet to go five and allow three in a playoff game, which he would probably take. And Sanchez has just been so good. I would expect him to start a game three. But yeah, it's the right pick. Wheeler was unreal last night again.
Yeah. No, Wheeler. And Wheeler is just such a, again, I mean, I'm just looking at the top guys. Of course, there are some strong number ones across the board here. But I still, especially having seen all these guys have success in October already, makes me feel better. So I'll go with those, the Phillies first.
I'm going to take the Astros.
Okay.
With my pick, which is really a group of six. And that is Framber Valdez, Yusei Kikuchi, Hunter Brown, Justin Verlander, Spencer Arrighetti, and Ronel Blanco. I think we're getting close to the Justin Verlander won't get a playoff start conversation. He's just been kind of meh. I think the Astros will end up giving him one. I wouldn't if I was in charge of the Astros. Thank God I'm not. I don't really want that job. But all of these guys are just really good. The depth here is really impressive. They will, whoever they start in a game four, I'll feel better about than anybody else, and probably a game three.
Yeah, well, and that's, I think, the point. I don't think we know exactly who is for sure locked in besides Framber and Kikuchi. And Kikuchi's been, I think the Astros are 8-0 or 9-0 in his starts, which is a really remarkable sequence when you consider what we were saying about that trade. He had some great quotes, too, about it, how he, you know, which seemed cliche on the surface where he was like, yeah, I wanted to, like, prove that this trade wasn't bad. And he said, he's like, I too was surprised they gave up those players for me. Kikuchi's an interesting guy. I'm excited for him to kind of get a little bit more shine this October. Ultimately, if they go 10-0 when his regular season starts and he gets blasted in the first wildcard series, no one's going to care. But, you know, it is still, he has been a huge part of why they are now going to probably comfortably win the division once again.
And because they are going to need to play the first round probably and have to start their third or fourth best starter against another team's number one in the DS, they have a relative advantage there because of how deep their stable is.
Yep, agreed. All right, I'm between three teams for my next pick, but I am going to keep it... Oh, man, the Lopez injury is spooking me with Atlanta. So you know what? I'm actually going to go with San Diego here. Again, considering one other team as well, I'm going to go with San Diego. Mostly, I mean, you can't find someone that likes Dylan Cease more, so that's a good place to start. But Musgrove has looked healthy and pretty good. Darvish looked the best we've seen him. And Michael King's just been one of the best pitchers in baseball quietly this whole season. So the injury stuff is a little sketchy with those three after Cease, but you could say that about most of these teams. So I'm going to go with San Diego here. If Lopez was fully healthy and rolling, I'd probably still lean Atlanta. But I am going to go with San Diego.
I'll take Atlanta then.
Yeah.
Sale is the best pitcher in the world right now. Still.
Yes.
He has really not tailed off. He will win the NL Cy Young. He will earn it. It is one of the most sensational comeback seasons we've seen in a long time. He deserves a lot of credit for that. Him in a game one, it's why Atlanta's dangerous if they get in, right?
If they get right.
If they get in.
If they get in, yep. Yep.
Schwellenbach, if he has to start a game three because Lopez is unavailable, I still feel pretty good about that.
Sure.
You take Reynaldo out of there, Sale, Fried, Schwellenbach, Morton is still really good. Yep. And so that's why I'm taking Atlanta here.
Yep. All right. So now it gets a little interesting. How disrespectful are we being to the Yankees of New York? Probably significantly. I am between them and the Royals of Kansas City.
I think you have to take the Yankees here.
I will take the Yankees, but I don't feel awesome about it. man, sorry to our friend Carlos, who has looked, I mean, Carlos is interesting because, like, he's won, when we think about postseason, of course, we've seen Cole in the postseason look good, look not good, right? Carlos, smaller track record. Luis Gil, one of the more ridiculous pitchers. Let's just hit on him quickly because he pitched last night. I mean, he is as effectively wild as we've seen from a pitcher in quite some time. And of course, Blake Snell is the pinnacle of that and Cease to some degree, although not as much this year. Now he's throwing more strikes. Luis Gil has the highest walk rate in baseball of any starting pitcher comfortably. It's around 13%. But he also has the third lowest batting average against and obviously an above average strikeout rate. It is not a fun guy to try to hit, and that is clear. However,
or watch,
right? However, he has been effective. And so I think he would get a start. We got more confirmation. Stroman will stay in the bullpen. Schmidt, again, was feeling great about him before he was injured earlier this season. I'll still go with the Yankees because I think the best version of Gerrit Cole and Rodon is pretty good. And because the Kansas City group is a little bit less tested at this stage. But it's close. It's really close for me. Are you going with Kansas City next?
I am. They have the sixth best starting pitching ERA over the last 2 months. Mm-hmm. I think Cole Reagan is really good. Seth Lugo hasn't tailed off too much. And Michael Wacha is a pretty good game three starter.
Solid. Yep.
Brady Singer gives me some heebie-jeebies in game four. Maybe they would go with Alec Marsh. I don't know if he's hurt.
No, right I now, think but... Singer. I don't. Yeah. Lorenzen is I guess more of a wild card. I know he's had some health issues, but I still feel pretty good about Kansas City. I mean,
okay,
they're leading baseball in starting pitching WAR for the whole season. I mean, that is a remarkable achievement. This pitching staff was an abomination last year, besides Cole Reagan's in the second half. So really impressive stuff there. And I think they are. And now I'm, you know, regretting not taking them. Okay, so this is where it gets really difficult.
Don't tell me who you're thinking about. Just tell me who you're picking. Can you imagine if at the MLB draft, this is something Jordan does a lot when we do draft stuff. He'll be like, you know, I'm choosing between these five. Can you imagine if like Rob Manfred walked up to the podium and was like, you know what, the number one overall pick?
I would love that.
The Pittsburgh Pirates.
I think that would be more entertaining.
About.
That's why I'm doing it. This is an entertainment product. I'm not, again, I'm like, okay, I'm not trying to win this draft. Maybe shame on me. Oh my gosh. Okay, if you're going strictly on how they've performed recently,
make a pick.
It's the Mets.
It is the Mets. That's the right pick.
And I'm between them and Arizona.
Just
make
a pick.
And I think I'm going to take the Mets.
Correct.
Stop telling me what's correct. That I don't appreciate.
Good pick.
Because I don't care. If you wanted
not
to take,
a correct pick.
You could have taken the
pick.
Mets before. You already made me feel like the Royals were a better pick than the Yankees after telling me to take the Yankees. So
yeah.
Your commentary can stay on your side of the draft room. That's fine.
You shouldn't listen to everything you hear on the internet.
Okay. I'm going to go with the Mets, and I kind of can't believe it. A lot of it, I mean, I love Severino, so I don't have any shame in going with him. And we've seen him pitch well in October. It's more of a bet on Sean Manaea than David Peterson, but hey, Bobby Wagner, if you're listening, David Peterson's looking pretty good. So, and McGill has also looked pretty solid recently. So, I guess the Mets, but I don't know.
The Mets are good, man. Like Manaea's freaking nails. They have the third best rotation ERA over the last few months.
Okay. All right, who you got?
Number one, by the way, is Toronto, which I'm not going to be drafting.
Bowden, baby, Bowden, the magic of Bowden Francis.
I will take Milwaukee.
Mm.
Milwaukee, which is Freddy Peralta, Frankie Montas, Aaron Savali.
Tobias Myers.
Hello. Tobias Myers.
He's really been the best guy.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Montas is, I know he wasn't very good last night, but he's someone who the Brewers have really helped kind of take another step after they acquired him at the deadline from the Reds. And then Peralta's just a legit frontline game one dude. The Brewers, part of what makes these pitchers good is how they deploy the bullpen with them. So if like I am drafting them with a poo-poo bullpen, I wouldn't take them, but I just think this is a really relatively underrated group.
Okay, so now we're looking at like some number ones that are certainly the better pick. But because of that, like I'm taking the Dodgers here because I love Yamamoto. I'm worried about the Yamamoto extra rest thing, but I think Yamamoto and Flaherty is really good. And I feel better about Buehler as being a reasonable option in game three or game four if they get one of these guys back. Of course, a lot of guys were maybe going to get back, whether that's Kershaw, whether that's Stone, whatever. Bobby Miller, non-factor at this point. But Buehler, even though the overall numbers aren't awesome, I still think with Yamamoto, and I think just with how good Flaherty's generally been, I'm going to go with the Dodgers at this point.
I would say that Bobby Miller is a factor still. If he continues to stink in regular season games, that is factoring into whether they win.
But again, now. I am not picking. He should not be someone that is going to be it. I think they would just bullpen it, let our friend Brent pitch three innings at the start of game four rather than let Bobby Miller continue to get blasted.
Ready for a wild pick? I'm going to take whatever the hell the Detroit Tigers are, because.
Okay. All right. You get Skubal. Yep.
Tarek Skubal going to win the Cy Young. He's amazing.
Okay.
The other like starting pitcher they have right now is Keider Montero, who has actually been sensational.
Yep.
Beyond that, this is so funny, dude. Beyond that, they don't really have any starters.
They don't. It's just, like, Brant Herder is like the bulk guy. He's like been throwing 4 or 5 innings in most of his outings. So he is probably the third name you would mention.
Yes.
But if you Casey go Mize by, like, has been bad, so I don't really know what to make of him.
I don't know who's pitching for the Tigers, what the plan really is. Okay. However, they've been getting outs as a unit, and they have the best team ERA over the last 2 months in baseball, rotation and bullpen together.
Yeah, bullpen's such a big part of that, and we're talking about rotation. So but fine. I mean, Skubal, whatever. You get Skubal. So
Skubal, Montero, Herder, and Dream. This might be disrespectful to a couple teams.
It is at this point, but that's fine. So we have 4 teams remaining. We have the Orioles, the Guardians, the Twins, and the D-backs. I am going to take Arizona here, if only because I did just watch them. I've watched some of these pitchers pitch in October and have some success. And even though it hasn't been particularly pretty lately, I guess I'll still go with them, but I don't feel awesome about it.
I'll take the Orioles, who, this is where what a group. No, Corbin Burns is really good. Yeah. And I think that Corbin Burns is lurking in the grass for the Orioles as an X factor. Because if they get in and he throws game one of a series, you have a really good chance to win it. You do, straight up. I know you're facing another team's number one in a 3-game wildcard set. But as bad as those offenses have been, if Burns goes out there and dominates, they could win that game. And then you're up a game. And then, you know, who knows? So I think that like him being the best pitcher left on the board, maybe one of the best pitchers in baseball, straight up.
Yeah.
Beyond him, it's a lot of shrugging. Eflin would be game 2. I imagine Albert Suarez would be game 3. The issue is that Grayson Rodriguez doesn't look like he's going to have time to make his way back before the regular season is over. Him starting a playoff game at this point feels very unlikely. So then it's like Dean Kremer and Cade Povich. Yeah. It's just not a strong unit.
So I would have taken Minnesota over Baltimore, if only because I don't think Pablo Lopez is that much worse than Burns right now. And I think Bailey Ober's solid. I mean, I'm not ecstatic. I'm going to see him pitch tonight. We'll see how he does. Then they have 3 rookies after that. Simeon Woods Richardson, David Festa, and Zebby Matthews. You know, Matthews had his best start of his young career so far last night. Richardson and Festa are a little bit safer, but all those guys are workload-wise are certainly pushing their career highs. And which leaves Cleveland, and obviously this is pretty disrespectful. And here's the reality, right? If we're doing a bullpen draft, they're the first pick. and so we're not doing a bullpen draft. Maybe we will do a bullpen draft. Maybe we should do a bullpen draft next week as a way to say sorry for picking Cleveland last. Bobby's been okay. Like, Bobby's been better, certainly the second half. Boyd, until Monday, had been really reliable. So it's probably underselling what he's kind of meant to them. And Cobb had been looking good, but then just keeps dealing with his blister. And so he keeps going back and forth. And Gavin Williams is just so inconsistent. Lively is reliable, but still not someone that you're necessarily ecstatic about in a postseason setting. So, again, it's disrespectful to a team that is probably going to clinch the division here in the next couple of days, a division that is very good. But their bullpen is so much better than really everybody else's that it's just, that's what it is about. And I don't really feel bad saying that, because I've watched it pretty strongly up close, and that's kind of been my takeaway. So, you know, maybe it's not, again, all these teams have questions. So is it that much worse than everybody else? But ultimately, I think it also is unfortunately a reflection of Bibee, right? I think ultimately, we kind of defaulted to the guys at the very, very top of the rotation and who's your best game one guy. And Tanner Bibee this year has been good. He's been good, but he hasn't taken, you know, another leap forward that maybe, you know, we kind of expected. And so that's kind of where I'm at with Cleveland.
We should do the draft that we did a couple years ago with Steven Nelson and Sarah Langs, where we draft for each playoff team.
Oh,
it's basically you draft offense, rotation, bullpen, manager, and vibes.
Yes. Did we do manager too? I think we did do manager.
I think we did.
I would run that.
Anyway,
that
the order of this draft: Phillies, Astros, Padres, Braves, Yankees, Royals, Mets, Brewers, Dodgers, Tigers, D-backs, Orioles, Twins, Guardians.
Let us know. Who did we disrespect the most? We're going to take a quick break, and when we return, hit on a couple things from last night before we say goodbye.
Welcome back to Baseball Barbercast. As I mentioned last segment, I got three shots yesterday. And so I got in bed at like 8:45 and ripped some NyQuil and called it an evening. And so I did not watch a whole lot of late night ball last night. Mm-hmm. Thankfully, there's two of us. Jordan Schusterman, hold my hand and tell me what happened.
Yeah. I just want to hit on a couple things. First, from Mariners Yankees. Juan Soto hit his 200th career home run. Juan Soto is 25. It was his 40th home run of the season. Juan Soto has now homered in all 30 ballparks.
He's 25.
Before he turned 26, he had six to get to check off this year. Like, he talked about this in spring training. He was like, I have the six parks that I'm going to this year, and I would like to check them off and get them done before I reach free agency at age 25. And he did it because he is Juan Soto. And that home run that he hit against Brian Wu was just like, it was perfect Juan Soto. That is Juan Soto. When I think about opposite field power, when I think about beautiful left-handed swings and backspinning a ball to left center, nobody does it better. He is one of a kind. Juan Soto is amazing. And honestly, we're not talking about him enough. So let's keep talking about Juan Soto more. The other thing for this game is that Victor Robles was caught stealing home.
Juan Soto is younger than Jazz.
Juan Soto's old friend Victor Robles. Juan Soto and Victor Robles, former future Nationals, former future faces of the Nationals. Victor Robles tried to steal home. And the reason why this was a big deal is because it was anytime anybody tries to steal home is a big deal because it doesn't happen very often. So you start there. It was bases loaded. Justin Turner was up. The Mariners were trying to come back after the Yankees put up some early runs. It was a 3-0 count because, as I mentioned earlier, Luis Gil does not know how to throw the ball in the strike zone very often. You couldn't really pick a worse time to try and steal home.
It could be the ninth inning. It
could be the ninth inning, right? But with that, all those context, right, with 2 outs, bases loaded, Luis Gil is about to walk Justin Turner. The odds of him about to walk in, Victor Robles can just walk home in if he waited 10 seconds, right? All he had to do was just wait, and he probably was just going to walk home with no contest. Instead, he tries to steal home. There is no excuse for this decision. It is one of the worst base running choices I have ever seen. And all of those things are important and true. The context that I just want to provide is the fact that Victor Robles, you may have heard, has been an unbelievable jolt of energy for the Seattle Mariners since he was DFA'd by the Nats and released, and they just signed him in the middle of the year and then extended him because of how well he's been playing. Victor Robles has just been an agent of chaos for the entire time he's been with the Mariners, and essentially every gambit has worked. He had stolen 25 bases without being caught before last night, including third 9 times or 8 times. So Robles he could do no wrong. Like, he was just feeling invincible and feeling free. And that is likely what made him feel like, one, okay, Luis Gil is a mess and not paying attention, and I'm already halfway home. I'm going to try to make it. It was sort of close. That is why he felt like, I can try this. Because if you just read, like, if you were not following that and you just thought, like, what an idiot, why was Victor Robles this random guy who was a flameout with the Nats? Why was he trying this? That is why. Is because Victor Robles has been doing insane stuff for 3 months and all of it has worked. And so he thought it was the ultimate heat check, trying to steal home for no good reason, and it failed. And now everyone is laughing at him. So that is unfortunate. And obviously, they probably don't win that game anyway because they couldn't stop the Yankees from scoring. But it was a very embarrassing moment.
The one moment from last night I wanted to bring up was the Ohtani homer.
Oh, sure. Yes. And I'll hit Astros Padres before we say goodbye. Yep.
Really the most inevitable home run I've ever seen. Yes. A gentleman by the name of Darren McCaughan was pitching for the Marlins, who I was unfamiliar with. Apparently, he was once on the Mariners.
Sure was.
I'm sure you know that.
Debut with them, yep.
But it was like, all right, second time Ohtani facing Darren McCaughan, who's a right-handed pitcher, and he like throws a sweeper. Throws a sweeper like low and in on Ohtani, and he just golfs it to the moon. And my thought was, what if McCaughan had pulled a Gerrit Cole, thrown up the four and poured it first? That's when you do it, dude. That's when you do it.
Right. No one would have blamed him. But then you would have the same, it's like, oh, he's dodging. He doesn't want to be a part of history. It's like, nah, dude, no one's going to remember that you were the 48th guy. It's all about 50.
You're good. The sauciest Ohtani has ever been after a homer. Like, oh, yeah. Flipped like the bat, had a little bit of...
Again, he just had no homers and no steals in Atlanta. It was the first time since early June that he didn't have a homer or a steal in a series. And so, also part of the inevitability of this swing. So, yeah, I mean, he's going to get 50-50 at some point here soon. It is. We will talk about it more next week. I am writing
pretty
a
good,
lot of words about it. It is a very big deal. So we will get that when he gets there. But yeah, it's nice to see him kind of get back there and be like, oh, okay. Of course I hit a home run here. This is exactly where he should. And the last game just to mention is Astros Padres. This is two teams, of course, feeling really good going into the postseason. It's just all kinds of umpire atrocities in this one. But the moment where Jose Altuve late in this game fouls the ball off his foot, they don't call it. The ball goes to third base. They throw him out and they said, no, sorry, that was just a regular ground ball to third base. Sorry, bud. And Jose Altuve, of all people, decides that how am I going to show this ump that even though this is long after the calls happened, that yes, it indeed hit my toe. I'm going to take my shoe and sock off and show, look, I got a little bit of a bruise there. Brennan Miller, I believe, was the home plate ump who was botching things left and right last night. It's just hilarious because you don't usually see toes during a major league game players.
You don't see feet.
You might see people, cut to fans, sitting on the berm and flip-flops. Okay, that's one thing. But this was new. This was something. This is like, oh, you don't see that ever. No, you don't. This is not. I've not seen this. But
I love it.
Very, very sassy and very, very funny.
Here's why this rules, because there's so much arguing against versus umpires in baseball, but there's very rarely any evidence. Jose Altuve came prepared with evidence. This is a man who is clearly watching Law and Order. This is a man who has clearly been accused of malfeasance throughout his career with no evidence. And so he knew. He said, oh, check out my toes. They are bruised. Yes. My toes do not look right.
My toe hurts. And I am
this
living.
Is obviously something of a reference to, I believe, in the, let's see if I could do this. In the 1985 World Series, I believe, someone fouled a ball off their foot and there was shoe polish on the ball. And so they were able to prove that there was a foul ball off the foot. Because and that's why you always shine your shoes.
Well, there you go. I'm also thinking... okay. Wow. So I was like, is this Altuve's first ejection? But apparently it is the third of his career and is his second this season. So I certainly did not seem like something I had seen before. So Altuve is not someone I would, but this is a great way for him to do it because Altuve is not going to be screaming. He's not going to be MFing guys. Like that's just not him. So this was a wonderfully in character endearing way to get thrown out of a game. So, and then of course, Greg Kessinger makes this amazing play to finish it at second base to clinch it.
I was wrong. It was the 1969 Miracle Mets and Cleon Jones. So it was in my brain somewhere.
Yeah, 16 years. All right. Well, that's it. That's our show. We will cut it off here before we reach the hour mark. Thank you all for listening. Thank you to Andrew Harth for producing. You can email us at baseballbarbacast@gmail.com. And we'll be back on Friday to say goodbye to all the teams that will not be joining us in October. But until then, enjoy the ball. And we will talk to you all very soon.